life can take you in many directions. No matter where you're going, we're with you for the ride and help you lead your life with convenient banking, great rates, and friendly service. Jovia Financial Credit Union. Bank on the bright side.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. And my guest is Steve Eubanks, the managing editor of the LPGA and a longtime colleague in the golf business. So delighted to talk with you, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, Ann. Great to be with you as always.
Oh, I love golfing with you and hanging with you and having you on the show. And we've had some good times for sure. And I know you're in San Francisco this week at the Olympic Club, the site of this year's U.S. Women's Open. What has been the highlight for you so far?
Well, I'm actually standing adjacent to the first fairway right now, and I'm looking out over Lake Merced. You can see TPC Harding Park in the background. To my right is San Francisco Golf Club, and up on the hill, even a little further right, is Lake Merced Golf Club. This little peninsula in San Francisco may be the golf mecca of America. It is just terrific here. If there's a better cluster of golf anywhere, I don't know where it is. This is just fantastic. And the golf course here at Olympic has just been, it's been a treat for everybody. I mean, the women to come to such a historic venue, they're thrilled about it, and everybody loves the golf course. It's difficult, I got to tell you. The rough is up, and the sight lines that they're having to pick are incredibly small, but you're hearing zero complaints. Everybody thinks this is exactly the kind of venue they want to come into from now on.
Yeah, it's so great that they're at the Olympic Club. There seems to be a trend to go to more historic, significant courses for the women. I looked at the future U.S. Women's Open sites, and next year you're at Pine Needles, right? Pine Needles Lodge in North Carolina. Then the year after, Pebble Beach. Then Lancaster Country Club. And then in 2025, Erin Hills. So good for the USGA that they're starting to select these historic, real significant courses for the U.S. Women's Open.
And I did speak with John Bodenhammer about this. He is the director of competitions for the USGA, and he was telling me that the announcements that you're going to hear soon about sites beyond Erin Hills are going to be even more impressive, that you're going to be talking about some of the classic and great old venues and major championship venues that everyone will recognize and that fans will be incredibly excited to see.
Well, and that's awesome. It's, you know, the women are getting the respect finally that they deserve. Not that the previous sites were bad, but I mean, these are historic, just storied courses. And it's great that the women can play at these courses. And, you know, getting back to the Olympic Club, that's been a venue for five previous U.S. Open championships. This is the first time the women are there. And talk about brutal. Only four players have finished under par. I was there covering Webb Simpson's win there during the U.S. Open in 2012, and I think he finished at plus one for the championship. And I just remembered that course. It was brutal rough, a lot of side hill lies, small greens, just really tough golf course.
It's tough, and it's fair, and everybody really enjoys it. There's something out here that you'll hear a lot when you're watching the championship called reversed amber. And basically what that means is if the hole dog legs to the right, the fairway slopes to the left. And it slopes to the left pretty significantly. So you're trying to play a hole that is turning one direction but sloping another. And so you have to commit to very small lines. And a lot of times those lines are in the rough because of the bounce that you're going to get off the side hill lies. So when you're seeing these players and you say, wow, why can't they keep it in the fairway? That's why. And from this rough, it's very hard to hit these very small greens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just been a delight watching some of the greatest players in golf, you know, kind of not tackle the course because you can't really conquer the golf course, but really deal with the challenges that the course presents. Let's move to the most pertinent issue facing the women today. And you and I talked earlier about purse and coverage disparity. What are your thoughts about that? I know the women will, you know, the winner will earn $1 million on Sunday afternoon. The men at the U.S. Open in a couple weeks will earn $2.25 million. I mean, the women have made a lot of progress. The USGA is really working on making this kind of progress. And I think I think, you know, you don't, obviously you want equality, right? But it doesn't happen overnight, this kind of growth, right, Steve?
It doesn't. And look, the purses on women's golf are as high as they've ever been. And you certainly do not want to chastise anyone who is currently a check writer in the women's game. And the USGA is the biggest check writer. They're making this championship the biggest and most attractive in women's golf. But the disparity, the disparity between what the men get and what the women get, it's big and it's shameful, quite frankly. But it also has a business element to it. And this is where I think people, you know, you want to shake your head and go, tisk, tisk, why aren't you paying the women as much? Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the amount of coverage that they get on network television is so different. So if you're the marketing director or the CEO of, I don't know, a pharmaceutical company, and you're trying to get into the golf space, you look at the numbers. Who drives the most eyeballs? Who is going to give our brand the most exposure? Well, right now it's the men's game. I fault the networks for that. I mean, look, they say, well, when we put you on network coverage, you don't generate the eyeballs that the men do. Well, it's because you throw us up there once a year, maybe twice a year. You know, if you put the pilot of Seinfeld up there and just left it alone, it wouldn't generate the kind of numbers. You've got to put us up there with some frequency so that we start getting the eyeballs that we're growing on cable right now.
That's right, and it is a catch-22 for sure. And the networks and the newspapers have to really focus more on promoting the personalities in the game. People want to know and get attached to these athletes, and it's easy to really be compelled by a lot of these women. They have terrific stories, but it's just a matter of editors assigning stories, you know, to their writers, both in you know, print and electronic media. It's just a matter of you know, covering more than, what, 4% of sports media news coverage features female athletes. That is pretty pitiful, I must say.
It's pitiful. And here's the thing. If you come to an LPGA event or a major championship involving women's golf, you're booked. You're a fan for life. There is not one person who comes out here and watches this and walks away saying, I didn't really enjoy myself. The people who come out here, it's like scales fall from their eyes. They love it, and they become instant fans because these athletes are the most engaged in all of sports. It used to be when you and I were covering multiple sports, and it was the NHL and NASCAR. You could always get a NASCAR driver to talk to you. You could always get a hockey player to talk to you. They were engaging. They were friendly. They were always good interviews. Now, it's women golfers. It's not even close. The personalities out here, the fan engagement, the fact that they are so earnest in wanting you to be here, there's nothing else like it. And I think that's what we have to sell to the fan base, and it's what we have to sell to the media. And I tell them, I would tell editors, just go one time, and you'll be hooked.
That's right. They are very fan friendly because they realize they need the coverage and deserve the coverage. And so they work hard to interact with fans and with sponsors and, you know, tournament officials. And hopefully with the media. I mean, you cover most of these LPGA events and these championships for women. Have you ever been denied a media interview?
None. Not once. Never once have I walked up to a player and not been granted an interview. Not only have I never not been granted an interview, in most instances, they stop me. Hey, how are you doing? Is there anything I can do for you? This is what the tour was back in the age of Arnold Palmer, where the reporter kind of had a relationship with the subject and could, you know, you could go to dinner with them. You can still go onto the driving range and just chit-chat. Still takes place out here on this tour, and they're happy to have you do it.
And I think it's just going to explode in the near future. I really do. I think more and more people are beginning to realize, as you say, how great these women golfers are, how accessible they are, And I've seen, being in this for a long time, and you too, I've seen a lot of progress. But when you still see that statistic, only 4% of sports media news coverage features female athletes, that seems appalling. It just seems like, though, more and more people are getting interested in these championships and watching these women. Do you see a little bit of progress at all or no?
I do, and you can see it in the numbers that we have on a Golf Channel. You can see it in the number of people who are showing an interest in coming out to these events, and we do, in fact, have some crowds this week at Olympic, which we haven't had quite some time, but there is limited fan interaction this week. People are anxious to get out and learn more about these players. During the pandemic, if there was an upside, it was that people became far more engaged in golf. They played golf, they watched golf, they became fans of golf. And the women's game was a big beneficiary of that. I mean, people tuned in. They started having a rooting interest in various players. So now that we are starting to have fans come back out, they want to go see those players. They want to get an autograph. They want to have a conversation. And the athletes are more than willing to accommodate. The other thing that's helped, Dan, is coming to places like Olympic, because there is an apples-to-apples comparison. People like you remember when Webb Simpson won out here. People who are a little older remember when Scott Simpson won out here. People can go back and look at Arnold Palmer and Billy Casper winning out here. You can look at all of those previous events, and you can compare them to how the women are playing the golf course, and you know what? They're holding up pretty well.
And the fact that Michael Wan, who led the LPGA for 11 years and made such a positive impact, will be the new CEO of the USGA. How do you think he and his team will improve things, Steve?
Oh, I think they'll improve things tremendously. I mean, Mike understands all of the issues that we just discussed. In fact, he has been at the forefront of getting the purses to the levels that they are now. He has lived these frustrations that we talk about with the amount of media coverage. He has had those conversations with the networks about putting them on network television, putting women on network television. So he will be a huge advocate for getting this done and for going to the various companies that are wanting to engage in golf and saying, you preach equity, you preach inclusion, let's start putting some money where your mouth is. Is this just lip service, or do you actually live these values in your corporate culture?
And Molly Marco-Samol has become the new commissioner of the LPGA, taking Mike Wan's spot. What are your thoughts about Molly Marco-Samol?
I'll tell you, I've had a couple of conversations with Molly, and the more I speak to her and the more I hear about her and talk to people who have known her for years, the more impressed I am. She was the athletic director at Princeton, and she was actually a two-sport athlete at Princeton. She played hockey there and was an all-Ivy Leaguer. So this is someone who brings an athletic background to the commissionership, something that we actually never had. So I think she's going to relate to the players and the players to her probably better than any of the previous commissioners. And the nice thing about it is Mike Wan was so wonderful at creating this marketing team and kind of this machine that is continuing to run and generate the revenues necessary to keep things going, that she doesn't have to rebuild that. She has that already in place. Her job now will be to take it to the next level and be an athlete commissioner, which I get the sense that she is.
Absolutely. Well, who are you looking for as far as name value? I know Michelle Wee West got a special exemption. Paula Kramer got a special exemption. Christy Kerr was given a special exemption. Those names are star power. What about some of the young players? I know Jessica and Nelly Korda are the sisters, daughter of two elite athletes. Their father, Peter Korda, won the Australian Open years ago. I remember covering Peter's tennis career. Who are some of the young stars that are going to shine for women in the golf space?
Well, I'll tell you, we've got so many of them. Our most recent major champion, who won the ANA Inspiration, Patty Kavitanikit, or as I like to just call her, Patty Cool, She's just tremendous to watch. She hits it 9 miles. She carries herself well. She's kind of like Clint Eastwood walking around on the golf course. She's just got all these elements of coolness about her, and a huge fan favorite, and somebody that people are going to want to watch for many, many years to come. You did mention the Fordas, and I have to tell you, I don't know of a better athlete family. When you look up and, you know, completely up and down, you've got both Peter and Regina, who were professional tennis players, leaders, both got into the top 25. Peter was ranked number 2 in the world. And then Sebastian Korda, the youngest sibling, who just turned 20 and won his first ATP event on clay in Europe prior to the French Open. So you have all 5 members of this immediate family who are winners at the highest level of their respective sports. That's a pretty impressive thing. I don't know if anybody else can claim that.
So, incredible.
They're going to be fun to watch for many years.
And Mega Gane, the 17-year-old from Homedale, New Jersey, she's been playing so well. The amateurs, I know she's already committed to Stanford, but it's great to see these amateurs playing so well.
That's one of the great things about the U.S. Women's Open is the commitment to the amateur game. And, you know, obviously it's an open. If you go qualify, you get in. And Mega got in. And boy, what a great story. And for those who don't know her, go listen to some of the interviews. This is as polished a 17-year-old as perhaps there is in anything, not just sports. It has been so refreshing to see someone who is thoughtful and smart and polished and just, you know, charismatic and ready. I've seen a lot of 30-year-olds who do not have the panache that this young girl does.
Steve, it's always a pleasure. We'll get you on again soon. Enjoy the Olympic Club and the final round of the U.S. Women's Open.
Thanks, Ann. Great to be with you.
Life can take you in many directions. No matter where you're going, we're with you for the ride and help you lead your life with convenient banking, great rates, and friendly service. Jovia Financial Credit Union. Bank on the bright side.